Hello, I'm Eric Schneider. Welcome to this podcast of articles from the Wall Street Journal, a presentation of AIRS LA. You are listening to this recording, which is provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyrighted property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Today's first article is titled Life Lessons from My Teenage Son by Katie Roelke. And then Nadid Subbarayan wrote, How to Make the Biggest Splash According to Science. Tara White has won The New Honeymoon, Romance, Adventure, Mom. Mark Penn and Andrew Stein did Generation Z, The Useful Idiot Generation, and we'll follow that up with an article by Matthew Hennessy, Kneecap and Other Nonsense of the Day. All these articles are from recent editions of the Wall Street Journal. So let's begin with today's first, Life Lessons from My Teenage Son. For a long time, my mother waited for the cosmic revenge of my teenagers being as terrible as I was in those years, but the cosmos did not oblige. I ended up with sweeter teenagers than I deserved. But there are still times their ways seem exotic, like I have a slightly different species, giraffes maybe, under my roof. We usually fear the impulse to tame or civilize teenagers, but maybe that's wrong. Instead of trying to teach or enlighten them, maybe we should be importing some of their seemingly chaotic and maddening traits into our own lives. Instead of making them more like us, we should be thinking about how we could fruitfully be more like them. Rather than feeling annoyed or amused or worried, we should be viewing their way of life as a gentle but powerful reproach of our own. When I ask my 16-year-old son at, say, 3 p.m., if he will be around for dinner, he looks at me like I am asking him where he will be in 3 years. His plans are always up in the air. Impromptu gatherings involving 3, 4, 5 people cohere instantaneously out of nowhere. Like most adults I know, my dinners, drinks, or lunches with friends are planned at least a week in advance, and usually weeks. While I don't think I would thrive in the total fluidity of teenage social life, maybe I could learn to see friends a little more spontaneously, to pop out for coffee or a walk with one of them on impulse. Wouldn't it be kind of great to decide to meet someone for drinks in 20 minutes? There is, after all, something staid and rigid about all of our hyper-planning socializing, a lack of naturalness. Our ahead-of-time scheduling doesn't take into account our mood in the moment. Adults are busy, sure, but there are afternoons when I could suddenly see a friend and my life would be enriched. I've always taken the conventional view that it's my job to organize my teenager, but now I am thinking maybe it is his job to disorganize me. I am the kind of person who arrives at airports 3 hours in advance of my international flight, as per instructions from the airline. I also get nervous in security lines about whether we will miss our plane. My teenager, on the other hand, is very zen at the airport. He raises his eyebrows at my excessive worrying. I can suddenly see myself through his eyes, needlessly anxious, absurdly concerned with trivial and fabricated timelines, expending unnecessary energy on pointless things. His way of moving through the airport seems preferable, wearing headphones, gliding indifferently, even if there is the slightest chance that, left to his own devices, he would miss a flight. My son has perfected that look of pure contempt that may be familiar to parents of teens. The recipient of this look, which I think may exclusively be me, has no real choice but to wither obligingly into nothingness. This look often comes because I have said something mean about someone or gossiped in an unkind but maybe funny way. I do think that my son will probably become more tolerant, more forgiving of my character flaws when he is older. But maybe I could borrow a little of that excessive moral clarity and disapproval teenagers are known for. I wonder if my own ethical relativism is a bit too convenient, lazily, morally slack. Maybe it is kind of awful to gossip about family members or to make fun of someone you actually like. Could I use a little of the teenage rectitude in my middle-aged moral lassitude? Maybe the look of pure contempt is actually a helpful reminder to be my better self. My son recently had an assignment to write a speech based on a reading for his 10th grade English class. He chose Ralph Waldo Emerson's idea about living above time. That is, the importance of not thinking about either the past or the future, leaving behind to-do lists and existential worries and goals, and just living like a rose in nature. As he was practicing, I was thrown by the energy of his speech. I thought to myself, why is this so good? The talk was exciting because he actually opened up to the idea, which is a teenage thing. He had totally engaged with this whole other view of how life could be. He was able to imagine casting aside all kinds of habits and ingrained behaviors. It was not a detached intellectual exercise. As a writer and professor, I like to think I am open to new ideas, but do I really get shaken up by anything I read? Am I radically open to new ways of looking at life? I would like to be. If you have a more reserved teenager, maybe instead of trying to extract details about his day, you can adapt the useful idea that you don't have to talk about everything. Rather than see his lack of interest in narrating his day as aberrant, maybe it's your desire to sweep everyone into even the most minor dramas of your morning that is the problem. Can you borrow a little of his reticence? Would that be so terrible? I tried, as an experiment, not telling my teenagers something I was gossiping about on a group chat, and maybe the conversation at our table did reach a slightly higher level. There are, of course, some lines we probably want to draw, general teenage behaviors we would not want to indulge in. Like, I will never drink those mini shooters of Fireball cinnamon whiskey they sell at bodegas, and I won't be walking across the Brooklyn Bridge at 2 a.m. anytime soon. I will never use 6 towels and leave 5 of them damply crumpled on the floor in my bedroom. My mind is open, but not that open. And now, how to make the biggest splash according to science? Hey, cannonballers, want to make the biggest splash possible? You might have to change your technique. Physicists who observed competitive water jumpers in New Zealand say there's a science in building the best water bomb. There's a belly flop, there's a cannonball. You can just jump in water without any maneuver, said Prakash Rohila, a bioengineer at the Georgia Institute of Technology. So, what's the best way to create a splash? That was our question. To find out, Rohila and his team did see dozens of YouTube videos of people practicing Manu jumping, a dive bombing technique that started as a hobby among Maori and Pacific Islanders in New Zealand. Now, Kiwis compete in events around the country that reward jumpers who make the tallest splashes. The men's division winner at this year's Manu World Champs tournament in Auckland took home $1,800 for a splash that hit 10.1 meters, about 33 feet. The best jumpers observed by Rohila and his colleagues entered the water butt first with their bodies bent at the hips to create a V-shape, the team explained in a study published in the journal Interfaith Focus. The jumpers call it popping a man. That 45-degree angle is giving the fastest and biggest splashes, Rohila said. But what jumpers do as soon as they enter the water is just as important as how they enter it. Straightening their body expands the air cavity they have created in the pool, boosting the height of the splash as the water rushes back to fill the gap. To estimate how quickly a jumper needs to straighten out, the scientists created a palm-sized plastic robot that replicated the hydrodynamics of a mono jumper's body plunging into the water. The answer was a few hundred milliseconds. Competitive divers who are judged for how little they splash when they hit the water manipulate the same physics with their moves, but in the opposite way. They enter the water fingers first with their bodies as straight as possible. Then they bend at the hips, swim forward, and throw their hands apart to dissipate the air pocket created by the dive, minimizing the surge of water rushing up behind them. It's the same idea, said Megan Lepwich, a fluid dynamicist at George Washington University, who co-wrote a 2023 study on how divers avoid splashes. Lepwich wasn't involved with this jumping study. For mono jumpers, leaping from a greater height can produce a taller splash, the Georgia Tech team found, but the jumper has less time to straighten out underwater. It's not easy to master, Rohila said of the technique described in his study, but I think eventually it will lead to the maximum size of splash. And now, the new honeymoon. Romance, adventure, mom. When Deanne Peterson told friends she was going on a honeymoon, they were confused. The 74-year-old had not mentioned getting married. Peterson explained she was accompanying her daughter and son-in-law on a two-week safari in Zambia and Zimbabwe. An extended silence ensued. It's not as unusual as you or Peterson's friends might think. Couples are inviting relatives on their post-nuptial getaways, saying they have a lifetime for romance and solo travel, but a finite period to spend with their families. Not surprisingly, a family moon can be a tough sell. Peterson's daughter, Robert Dixon, says her friends were aghast when she told them about the plan to bring her mom. Friends of the groom chided him with mother-in-law jokes. They both insist the invitation felt natural. This chapter of life isn't just about starting our marriage. It's about honoring the people who shaped us, said Dixon, 35, of New York. It felt like a celebration of family. The parents of the groom, Alex Dixon, were invited too, but they declined, saying they would have come if the couple chose another location, like the south of France. Bringing the in-laws is part of a broader redefining of the traditional honeymoon where newly married can cocoon themselves from the outside world. There's the buddy moon, in which newlyweds invite friends on vacation after the wedding. There's also the post-destination wedding extension. Couples say the presence of mom and dad don't have to douse the flames. Julia and Stefan Kuhn were brainstorming honeymoon locations when her parents, Eileen and Myron Petruk, mentioned that they were planning an anniversary trip to South Africa. Eileen Petruk casually suggested they do a honeymoon anniversary trip. Not wanting to be left out, Julia's younger sister joined too. The couple, who live in Charleston, South Carolina, had gotten married during COVID in a ceremony with no guests and had to postpone their honeymoon because international travel was tricky. So when her mom proposed the trip, they jumped at the idea, said Julia Kuhn, 30. The extended clan embarked back in the summer of 2023 for Africa, where they all agreed the best part of the trip was getting to see the big five game animals. The Kuhns carved out time for traditional honeymoon activities like a couple's massage and in-suite private dinners. They also had their own villa with a private pool. There's a reason why Julia and I click so well, and that's because we both value family, said Stephen Kuhl, 30. It was an awesome trip, and I would do it 10 times over. Katie and Rafe Kopak divided their Italian honeymoon in two. They spent a week sightseeing alone in Venice, Florence, and Verona. Then they met up with Katie's parents in a villa in Tuscany, where she said they cooked, decompressed, and made memories. Katie, 34, crafted the plan after her father was diagnosed with a degenerative brain disorder 3 months before their wedding. "We had to draw boundaries and be fulfilled before we met up with them," says Kupak of Scottsdale, Arizona, whose parents flew in from Seattle. "The beginning of a marriage is usually focused on you and your partner, but you can't choose when another huge life event happens, so we had to adjust and make the best of the situation." Some couples who ask friends and family to travel long distances to see them wed are rewarding them with a wedding honeymoon combo. That's what Annie Morrison and Matt Gear did after their nuptials in Scotland. When the wedding they were planning in Kalamazoo, Michigan was getting increasingly expensive, they texted about 30 members of their family asking if they'd be willing to travel overseas. 19 family and friends said yes, so they scrapped the Michigan celebration for a destination wedding honeymoon. With their original plan of a large wedding, Morrison knew she'd want to be alone with her new husband on a honeymoon. Once they changed the format, her thinking changed. "Why wouldn't we want to travel together? We love you guys," Morrison, 29, of Somerville, South Carolina, said. They surveyed their guests about where they'd like to visit and prepared an itinerary of their mini tour of Scotland based on the results. "Matt's dad said it was the best vacation he'd ever been on," Morrison said. When their family and friends left at the end of the week, Morrison and Kerr rented a luxurious hotel room in Edinburgh and stayed an extra day. Claire, 30, admits, "It was nice to be Annie and I for a day." And now, Generation Z, the youthful idiot generation. Young people typically start out on the political left, but become more conservative as they grow older. Baby boomers who once marched against the Vietnam War got jobs, got married, and had children. Now their grandchildren see them as tethered to Fox News. Today's young Americans are following the first part of that pattern. Ask a group of them to choose between capitalism and socialism, and they will split right down the middle. Their support was crucial in nominating Zohan Madani, who says he wants to capture the means of production as the Democratic candidate for mayor of New York. But will the young people outgrow their radicalism? There is reason to doubt. Record numbers of Generation Z are pursuing higher education, with 53% of those 18 to 24 having completed at least some college. That's a troubling sign given how left-wing ideology has come to dominate higher ed. College is where many young people learn that socialism means free stuff. They are indoctrinated to blame capitalism for racism, inequality, and climate change. Unlike the older generation, they grew up after the end of the Cold War and have no memory of the atrocities committed by the Soviet Union, Maoist China, and other socialist regimens. Maybe they'll see socialism in action in New York. Meanwhile, the process of growing up is slowing down. The median age of first marriage is 30, almost 5 years later than in 1985. And this means that young people settle down and take on responsibilities later, if they ever do. Nearly half of Generation Z adults born between 1997 and 2007 are not in a committed romantic relationship. They largely live communally, often work from home, and are connected primarily through the 4+ hours they spend each day on their phones. Their primary sources of information are TikTok and Facebook, whose algorithms lead them to material that reinforces their preconceptions rather than challenges them. Another traditional source of ballast, religion, has become lighter as well. More than one-third of Generation Z reports no religious affiliation, and roughly 60% did not participate in religious services growing up. That produces a lack of moral grounding. Put this all together, and it's little wonder that about half of 18 to 24-year-olds tell pollsters they support Hamas over Israel. By and large, these young adults are not hardcore ideologues. They're merely ignorant. About half of young Hamas supporters say they would not want to wipe out Israel and prefer a two-state solution. Call them the useful idiot generation, mouthing slogans and causes they don't understand and from which they would recoil if they did. The older generations are not blameless here. We created the environment that produced this unmoored generation. Socialism and anti-Semitism will continue to fester and grow if we do not stand up and reform our university, reinforce our basic values, and balance our social media. And now we do have one more, kneecap and other nonsense of the day. At a certain age, you realize there's only so much new nonsense you can take on board. This memory, almost full realization, is at odds with the culture's drive to shovel new nonsense in your direction. The modern digital economy assumes that you have an unlimited appetite for diversions. The algorithm is relentless. To get by without getting bogged down, it's necessary to cultivate habits of discernment. The book of Proverbs teaches that fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. In 2025, fear of distraction can't be far behind. Mindfulness is the rage. Highly successful work hard at keeping the background noise of life to a minimum. CEOs are careful to avoid unnecessary meetings and frivolous conversations. The goal is to open up space for the kinds of surprises that come only when the mind and the calendar is clear. But discernment is more than developing the ability to maintain focus or opening yourself to inspiration. It's learning the difference between what matters and what does not. Most of us don't develop this ability without taking a few of life's lumps, losing someone you care about answers more of the fundamental questions than any college philosophy class. Having kids does the same thing. After you become a parent, the nonsense that once concerned you simply does not anymore, while things you never cared about become your obsession. Mortgage rates, for instance, or the abysmal state of public education. Time is a teacher too. Fads come and go. Skinny jeans, superhero movies, bubble teas, MAGA hats, trans flags, in a few decades, all will be time capsule stuff. A large percentage of cultural and political flotsam can be profitably ignored. Allow too much of it in and you'll start feeling overwhelmed. Based on what I read and see, young people are having trouble with this concept. The journal has excelled in recent years at identifying workplace trends among 20-somethings. This includes a phenomenon called quiet quitting. As best I can tell, it means not doing your job and hoping no one notices. This used to be called trying to get fired, a poor way to start a career. My message to Generation Z, ignore this nonsense. You are not fooling anybody. Quiet quitting could succeed only if your boss were in a coma. Quiet working will take you further. Call it silent grinding if your meme broken brain prefers. Companies are cutting costs and laying off workers this summer. The business press says it's a response to tariff-related uncertainty and the rise of artificial intelligence. My guess is that the ranks of the newly unemployed include more than a few quiet quitters. As someone who consumes a lot of news, I've had to train myself to tune out a steady stream of new nonsense. It's a matter of professional hygiene. Certain names and narratives go right into the spam folder. Time is precious. Nobody has infinite powers of concentration. Without these filters in place, I'd be too mentally scattered to do my job or any job. Jeffrey Epstein tops my list of things not to think about. The guy was a conniving, perverted blackmail artist. That's all anyone needs to know. It is not news that some people can't resist a conspiracy theory. Bad, but not news. Also not news, airplane contracts, the benefits of vaccines, Bill Belichick's young girlfriend. Speaking of stupid, have you heard of Kneecap? I pray you have not. The Irish language rap group from Belfast made an ugly anti-Israel speech at the Coachella Outdoor Music Festival back in April and has continued stirring the pot this summer. The British media are largely besotted with the radical trio who prayed around in PLO-style attire and IRA-style, saying things like, the only good Tory is a dead Tory. Kill your local MP. Since Kneecap is an Irish language rap group from Belfast, odds are solid its members won't go down in history as artists of consequence. And while their anti-Semitism isn't new, it is nonsense. I hope their 15 minutes of fame expires soon so I can go back to forgetting they exist. New nonsense piles up fast. Artificial intelligence will only make the problem worse. While humans have an unlimited capacity for wonder and amazement, every day is only 24 hours long. Do not waste your precious time on videos of world leaders who look like babies doing scenes from classic movies. Save some room on your mental hard drive for the stuff that really matters. That brings us to the end of today's articles. I'm Merrick Schneider, and I'll be back soon with more articles. Thank you for listening.